Hare Krishna. I think we can begin this evening by briefly recapitulating or revising some of the main points that we discussed yesterday. So a little quiz. What is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita? It is the appendix to the Mahabharata. Which Mahabharata? Jaimini's Mahabharata. How many Mahabharatas exist? Many. Compiled or spoken by Vyasadeva and then recited by Vaishampayan and further later recited by Suta Goswami at Naimisharanya. That's the one that we are familiar with, that the world is familiar with. That's the only existing, authoritative, original Mahabharata. There are many others, as Vaishampayana Rishi himself says in the Mahabharata, and they're not existing. But Brihad Bhagavatamrita has, by the mercy of Srila Sanatana Goswami, appeared. It is the appendix to the Mahabharata that was spoken by Jaimini Rishi to King Janamejaya. So Janamejaya heard the Mahabharata from sage Vaishampayan as well as from Jaimini, which is the appendix to the Mahabharata that is spoken by Vaishampayana. The Harivansha. The Harivamsha. It's also sometimes referred to as a Puran because it has many, many pastimes of Krishna. And when Jaimini, or rather Janamejaya, heard both the Mahabharatas, which one did he like more? Jaimini's Mahabharata. Was the first one not authentic? It was. So what was special about the second Mahabharata? It was filled with devotion to Krishna. Krishna was the predominant personality who appeared in every portion of the Mahabharata spoken by Jaimini. Although Krishna is also intended to be the ultimate purpose of the Mahabharata recited by Vaishampayana, but somehow it got covered over by so many other narrations. But in Jaimini's Mahabharata, there was no such covering. It was fully rasa-laden. And when King Janamejaya heard this, it was like something he had never heard before. He was struck with wonder. And then he wanted the sage Jaimini to take it to its completion, to the stage of perfect completion. And then he wanted him to add something to conclude, and then the Brihad Bhagavatamrita was spoken. So how did the Brihad Bhagavatamrita appear? Was it found in Varanasi or in Jagannath Puri? Where was the Brihad? How did the Brihad Bhagavatamrita manifest for us today? Through the meditation, through the meditative realizations of Sri Sanatana Goswami. As I was mentioning yesterday, that is not surprising because Sanatana Goswami is a Mahabhagavat, he is an associate of the Lord directly. And also it's not unprecedented because that is the way most of the Vedic literatures are manifest to the vision of conditioned souls. It is through the via medium of exalted, transparent personalities like Sanatana Goswami. The Vedas, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, they've all come by this process of internal revelation, mystic revelation. And who approached who to hear this? Uttara approached Parikshit Maharaj. Uttara was Parikshit's mother. And she wanted a condensed synopsis of all that Maharaj Parikshit had heard from Shukadev Goswami. So in the brief period between the time Shukadev Goswami completed the Bhagavatam and departed, till the time the snake Takshak came and bit Maharaj Parikshit, that was the brief period in which Uttara saw the window of opportunity and immediately came to Parikshit and wanted to get the nectar, in brief. Of course, Parikshit didn't have 7 days, but in whatever time was available, Parikshit spoke the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. The first part of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, what does it deal with? The search for the essence of Krishna's mercy. Shri Krishna Kripa Sara Nirdhara. And it details the transcendental voyage or voyages of Narad Muni. Narad Muni is seeking that devotee or those devotees who are the recipients of Krishna's greatest mercy. And in the course of this voyage, he begins from Prayag, Allahabad, moves on to a king in South India, then on to Indra and Brahma, Shiva. He hears about the glories of the residents of Vaikuntha. He goes to Prahlad eventually, finally to Hanuman, onwards to the Pandavas, then to the Yadus. He is led to Uddhava, who then takes him to the Brajabasis. And amongst the Brajabasis, it is the gopis of Vrindavan. So the conclusion of the first part of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita is that the gopis of Vrindavan are the most exalted devotees because they are the recipients of the highest, the deepest mercy of Krishna. Yesterday we concluded with Narad Muni coming to Dwarka and Krishna being in a state of agitation because he was feeling an intense separation from Vrindavan. And his associates in Vrindavan, led by Baladev, didn't know how to pacify Krishna. They tried their best. And eventually Brahma arranged for Garuda to have Krishna transported to Nava Vrindavan, a new Vrindavan that was made near Dwarka, between the Raivata mountain and the sea, that had been constructed by Vishwakarma. And that was to pacify Krishna's feelings of separation, so that when he went to that Vrindavan, he would think he was in Vrindavan. So arranged there was a complete replica of Vrindavan, down to Mother Yashoda and the cowherd boys and the gopis and the cows, and everything and everyone was there. So finally, when Krishna was brought there, Uddhava was explaining to Narada, just see the situation. Narada was watching from the sky, struck with wonder about this. And because he was unconscious to the external world, Krishna, so Baladev somehow woke him up and saying, Krishna, come on, wake up. Don't you see? It's time you have to go to the forest. The cows have already departed for grazing. The cowherd boys are waiting, blowing their horns for you. And then Krishna awoke. Oh, really? I have to go to graze the cows. Yes, yes. And he immediately got up and went. He was in Nava Vrindavan. He apologized to Mother Yashoda, who was there. I'm sorry, dear mother. I dreamt that I was for a long time in Mathura and Dwarka. And now I've realized that was just a dream. So that's why I was late in waking up. And then he departed with the cows. The cowherd boys were there. And in great joy, with Sri Dama, Subal and so on, he ventured into the forest. He met the gopis at a certain distance there, had many pastimes with them. At a certain point, as he walked in, he came to the shore of the sea. And he thought, there's water here, but it doesn't look like Yamuna. There's waves that are billowing here. And how come I'm confused? Where am I? And that's the time Baladev thought it fit to come to Krishna and reveal that he had been tricked, transcendentally tricked. And he said, Krishna, please remember who you are. Remember that you have come here for a purpose, to fulfill the purposes of the demigods. And please remember your friend and cousin, your devotee Yudhishthira is in trouble. The brother of Shalva is attacking him. He's about to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. He needs your help. There are many demons who have to be vanquished. And Krishna's Kshatriya Bhava again rose. Oh, am I? Yes, actually, I'm the Lord of Vaikuntha. You're right, yes. So where is Yudhishthira? What happened to him? And then everybody was relieved. Okay, Krishna is now back to normal. So then Krishna was brought back to Dwarka, and everybody was very pacified and happy to see him there. And of course, much discussion happened at that point. Narad Muni also arrived there. And Krishna had lunch with Narad Muni. And Narad Muni asked him, so who is the recipient, the highest recipient of your mercy? And he laughed and he said, Narada, actually all the devotees that you've been to, starting from Prayag, coming all the way to the gopis of Vrindavan, all of them are perfect. But in the spiritual world, there are different degrees of perfection. So these devotees represent all the different degrees of perfection. But let me tell you, the highest stage of mercy is found in the gopis of Vrindavan in the form of the intense viraha bhav, or the mood of separation that they feel from me. So Sanatana Goswami explains in his commentary that the highest limit of perfection or the highest extent of Krishna's mercy is found in the gopis of Vrindavan, because they manifest in their devotion a degree or an intensity of separation from Krishna that is never found anywhere else in any other realm of existence. And Sanatana Goswami describes in great detail the glories of this mood of separation. And said, this intense bliss is not found anywhere. It appears to us, ordinary folk of this world, to be some kind of misery. But on that platform, it is the most intense bliss that is ever possible to experience for anyone in all of creation, material or spiritual. And that is more or less the conclusion. Of course, as I mentioned yesterday, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita with its commentaries is a vast text. And it is not possible to describe all these things in detail in just two lectures. But we conclude here with this philosophical point about the glory of the mood of separation of the residents of Vrindavan and especially the gopis. And then Narad Muni asked for some blessings from Krishna. And Krishna happily says, yes, please ask me whatever you want. And it's instructive for us to hear the kinds of blessings that Narad Muni asks from Krishna. He said, Krishna, my first request to you, my first benediction that I'm asking for you, is that no one ever should feel that he or she has had enough mercy, or that he or she has done enough devotional service ever in life, or that he or she has enough love for Krishna. No one should ever feel that. And Krishna laughed and said, but that's already an established fact, Narada. But nevertheless, it's already happening. Since you say it, so be it. It will happen. Narada's in great bliss. So therefore, those devotees who think they've become pure devotees, They're not pure devotees. Because that's not the proper Siddhanta. The pure devotee will never think that he or she is a pure devotee. They always think, oh, I'm not a pure devotee. I'm not a devotee at all. So these are some of the ironies or the paradoxes of the subtleties of devotional service. Then he asked the second benediction. He said, I wish that I may forever wander all over the universe like a madman, constantly absorbed in the nectar of chanting your glories and your holy names, and distributing this joy to others. I want this benediction from you. And Krishna says, Tathasti. Yes, so be it. One more benediction, Krishna. Yes, yes, ask for it. Anyone who hears your pastimes, being convinced of their importance, should get the power to worship your lotus feet with great devotion. Done. So Narad Muni is pleased as anything. He is jumping and dancing with joy because his heart's desires have been fulfilled. He said, actually there was no need for me to ask any benediction because I understood what the highest limit of your mercy is. So what more need for any asking for any benedictions? But nevertheless he did, because in the transcendental platform ultimately everything is unlimited and it's all focused on selfless devotion to Krishna. So having narrated this, Maharaj Parikshit paused and said to his mother, so my dear mother, the lessons to learn from this is that number one, you should always worship Krishna, the cowherd boy of Vrindavan. He was implying, therefore, that she should worship Krishna of Vrindavan and not necessarily the four-armed form of Narayan of Vaikuntha or any other expansion of Krishna. But he was focusing on Shyam Sundar Govinda of Vrindavan. Second, he said, my dear mother, you must try to become a servant of the gopis of Vrindavan. Because if he said that you must try to become a gopi, she may think, this is impossible. How do I do that? How is it possible? So he said, become a servant of the gopis of Vrindavan. And how does one do that? How does one cultivate that mood? So he gave the third instruction to his mother. He was now like a guru to his mother. And he said, constantly chant the holy names of the Lord, perform sankirtana. And in this way you will develop the mood of being a servant of the gopis of Vrindavan. And it is on this note that the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita concludes. Now, Uttara is completely in bliss. And so is Maharaj Parikshit. Whoever hears such Krishna Katha, whoever speaks such Krishna Katha, both categories of people feel a divine ecstasy. And then she was not satisfied. She was not satiated. And she wanted to know more. And at this time, when Janamejaya Rishi is hearing this also, so he says, I also want to hear more. Please tell me what happened then. And Jaimini Rishi says, by the mercy of Shukadev Goswami, I was sitting right next to the mother-son duo as this dialogue was going on. So I actually heard it, because I was sitting very close to them. So Jaimini Rishi not only was able to speak this dialogue again to Janamejaya, because he was physically right next to Maharaj Parikshit and his mother Uttara, so he heard it, but also because he had received the mercy of his guru, Srila Shukadev Goswami, by which he could understand the content of that conversation as well. It's not sufficient to just be able to hear it. One must also have the capacity to understand. Of course, the beauty of Krishna Katha and of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada and the other acharyas have explained, even if one does not understand, but if one is faithful and one sits in the association of faithful devotees and hears the narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam from an authorized source, meaning a devotee who is coming in the proper disciplic succession, then one's heart is purified rapidly and one develops pure love for the Lord within a short time. So Jaimini had the blessings to do both, to physically sit next to Maharaj Parikshit and Uttara and also to understand the content and taste the nectar. So then he continues the narration. And he says that Mother Uttara now was anxious for more. And she knew the time was really rapidly running out. So she said, "My dear son, now I know that Vaikuntha is glorious. And all the residents of Vaikuntha are also glorious. And there is no limit to their perfection. And yet, I am wondering, those devotees who relish Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan like the Ras Leela and who are absorbed in such pastimes and the associates like Nanda, Yashoda and so on, how could they go to the same destination that the worshippers of Lord Narayan go to in Vaikuntha? Even the other forms of the Lord like Lord Ramachandra, Lord Narasimha, how could these devotees who relish such pastimes, such intimate pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan, how could they go to the same destination? There must be another higher destination to which they go, meaning higher than Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha, as you know, is that abode which has millions of spiritual planets, where the Lord resides in his four-armed form, accompanied by innumerable loving devotees who serve the Lord in a mood of awe and reverence with an understanding of his godhood. But Mother Uttara's question is very important, because in Vrindavan there is no acknowledgement or understanding of Krishna's godhood. And even where such things are brought to the attention of the Brajabasis, or even if they happen to know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, it doesn't affect or doesn't minimize or reduce the sweetness of their bhava, their emotion towards Krishna. On the contrary, any display of Krishna's Aishwarya or his prowess only serves to increase the sweetness of the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is not a place where the devotees are concerned with Krishna being God. Whereas in Vaikuntha, that is the consideration. So Mother Uttara has thought very wisely, very intelligently, that there must be a destination that the lovers of Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan go to that is different from and higher than the other planets of Vaikuntha. So is there such a world? Maharaj Parikshit is now struck with wonder. And he praises his mother. He says, "Mother, that's an excellent question. Nobody in history so far has asked this question." And then he goes on to describe this, and then begins the second part of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, that magnificent journey of Gopakumar. As the hero of the first part was Narad Muni, the hero of the second part is Gopakumar. These are our real heroes, not the other heroes of the world who are fallible soldiers. So we should make such personalities our heroes. And then he begins the narration. And just as Narad Muni goes from place to place within and beyond the universe, searching for the highest recipient of Krishna's mercy, so also Gopakumar is going to describe his own journeys in different parts of the universe and beyond in search for the highest conception or the highest manifestation of the Absolute Truth and of devotion to Him. And the scene opens at a holy place where there is a Brahmin from a place called Prag Jyotishpur, which is in present-day Assam. He was a worshipper of the goddess Kamakhya. And as you know, the demigods and goddesses are also devotees of Krishna. So somehow, by some stroke of good fortune, she gave him a 10-syllabled Gopala mantra to chant. So this Brahmana didn't understand the purport of the mantra, the importance of the mantra. And he just had some faith in Kamakhya Devi, so he began chanting this mantra. And by chanting that, he felt some happiness and some detachment, some satisfaction. So he started, he became detached, he left his place, and he wandered. He wandered into different places, and eventually came to different places. And because of the shortage of time, I won't go into the different places that he went. Likewise, also later with Gopa Kumar. And at each place, he came across people or brahmanas who were engaged in some or the other kind of religious activity. At one place, they were following some Vedic sacrifices, so he also started following it. But because the taste of the mantra was so nice, he developed a distaste for that kind of Vedic ritual. He went to Kashi, Banaras, where the monists were contemplating all sorts of philosophical discussions and thinking about the impersonal and so on. And there he developed the desire to become a sannyasi. And then Lord Shiva appeared to him in his dream and said, "You fool, don't try to be a sannyasi, just go to Braj. Just go to Vrindavan. Forget about becoming a sannyasi and this monism and all that." So then he said, "All right." Then he set out towards Vrindavan. And on the way, he came to Prayag. At Prayag, he met many devotees of Lord Vishnu who were serving Lord Madhava, Lord Bindu Madhava. And there were many festivities going on there, chanting and worshipping and so on. And he also became attracted to Lord Madhava. All along, his chanting of the mantra was going on because he still had respect for Goddess Kamakhya. Even though he didn't know the purport of that, but he was chanting it. And the deity, the worshipable deity of that mantra, Gopal, Madan Gopal, had appeared to him in a dream, in a vision. So he had now some idea of what his worshipable deity looked like. But he saw that he looks different from this Madhava who's being worshipped here. The Madhava here is four-armed and so on. And eventually Madhava also appeared to him in a dream and said, "Just follow the advice of Lord Shiva. Go on to Vrindavan. Go quickly." So he went to Braj, came to Mathura, took bath in the Vishram Ghat, and went into Keshi Tirtha. And there he heard some loud crying and accompanied by chanting of the holy name, Sankirtan. And he went into a forest to locate the source of that sound. And soon he found an effulgent personality who looked like a cowherd boy. And the Brahmana thought, "This is my worshipable Lord. He is the deity of my mantra." And he offered him obeisances. And that cowherd boy laughed and he said, no, I'm not the Supreme Lord. But come sit down. I know which mantra you are chanting. I know you're a Brahmin from Mathura whose ancestors went to Assam, to Kamakhya to worship, and you've come back here chanting your Gopal mantra. So now this cowherd boy decided that he would reveal the deepest secrets to this Brahmana. And he said, "Let me tell you my life story. Even though it is not recommended in the scriptures to talk about oneself because it transgresses the principle of humility. But nevertheless, because it is going to help you to achieve your goal of life, so I will narrate what I have been through, what I have seen in my life. And of course, that's something very common. People like to hear the experiences of others. I remember many years ago, I don't know if it's still going on, Back to Godhead had a very popular column that was called How I Came to Krishna Consciousness. And I remember when I used to read the Back to Godhead, this was one of the first columns I would read, because it was very interesting, because it talked about how different people came to Krishna consciousness. So you hear their life's experiences. So following in the parampara, it started with this cowherd boy. And this cowherd boy's name was Gopakumar. And then Gopakumar now begins his life story, an exciting adventure that he's going to take him to. And he says, my dear Brahmana, I was born in Govardhan. I was a cowherd boy. I came from a Vaishya family that tended cows. And I would go out in the morning and all day I'd be tending the cows. And I had many, many other friends in Govardhan and other parts of Vraja. And we would move around like this. And one time, we saw this Brahmana, who was a first-class Brahmana. Actually, we used to see him many times. And he was always absorbed in ecstasy of chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Sometimes he would fall to the ground. Sometimes he would exhibit such transcendental symptoms of ecstasy that we would be struck with wonder. Upon seeing us, he would offer his obeisances. Sometimes he would embrace us. And we would like to go and serve him. Even though we were not very respectful to him, but he was very respectful to us. So we would give him milk and yogurt and so on. Because we were cowherd boys, we had plenty of these things. And one day, this Brahmana embraced me when I went to give him some milk. And he said, I'm going to give you a mantra that will perfect your life. And he told him a mantra. He told me this mantra. And when he was going to explain the method of worship according to this mantra, he immediately swooned in ecstasy. And after that, I tried to revive him, but he came to external consciousness and just went away. So I just had that mantra. I realized I had been initiated, but I didn't know who this personality was. I didn't know what the meaning of this mantra was, what its importance was. I didn't know the method of chanting this mantra and how to focus the mind in a meditative state on this mantra. He was left all of a sudden. He had gone all of a sudden. But I had some faith in this personality. And therefore, I decided that I would continue chanting this mantra even though I didn't know what it was all about. And then I developed this deep sense of detachment. And I felt some inner happiness and satisfaction by chanting this mantra. It is the same mantra, O dear Brahmin, that you have received. And I will tell you more about this. So then I left Govardhan and I started wandering. And I was going here and there. I came to a different place. I came to the bank of the Ganga. And there was a Brahmana who was worshipping a Shaligram Shila. I had no idea what a Shaligram Shila was. I asked the Brahmin, what is this? He said, this is Lord, the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And he said, Lord, is a stone like this? You see, Gopakumar was a very innocent, naive cowherd boy of Govardhan. He was not well schooled, even in ordinary knowledge and also in spiritual knowledge. He didn't know much about spiritual culture, or he didn't know anything practically. But he had been born in Vrindavan, in Govardhan. So he asked, what is this Shaligram Shila? So he explained, the Brahmana kindly explained to him the nature of this, of the Shaligram Shila, that he is directly the Lord. And Gopakumar explains that I was overcome with sorrow and I broke into tears and I said, this is the Supreme Lord and you're just giving him some, you know, a few fragments of food to eat, and you're packing him in a box and closing it. And then the Brahman said, well, this is the way the Shaligram Shila is worshipped, and then we pack him in a box. As far as the food is concerned, I'm a mendicant. What can I do? Whatever I receive, I feed him. But anyway, if you want to see gorgeous worship of the Lord, you should go to the capital of the kingdom. The king is a great devotee. And there's a nice, beautiful temple there. So then immediately Gopakumar rushed to the capital. And there he found a large temple where gorgeous worship of the deity was going on. And he participated in the festivities with great joy. And he remained in the temple there for a long time, worshipping, and he was getting a lot of happiness. All along, he never stopped chanting the mantra that was given by his guru, that mysterious personality who had disappeared. And so increasingly, he was starting to feel some happiness, but at the same time, there's something missing. He was missing Braja. He was missing Govardhan. He was missing the happy-go-lucky life of a cowherd boy. And then one day, it so happened that the king was looking for a son to adopt because he didn't have an heir. And then he zeroed in on Gopakumar. He said, yes, I'm going to adopt this boy. So he adopted him and made him the crown prince. And when the king died, then Gopakumar became the king of the kingdom. And then he continued to have gorgeous worship there. He ensured that the standards of worship and the standards of festivities became better and better. And he spread this worship throughout the kingdom. One day, as the king, he was habituated to receiving many sadhus who came from different places. Some sadhus came from Jagannath Puri. And they told him the glories of Lord Jagannath and about Jagannath Puri. And as they went on and on describing the glories of Jagannath Puri, the king was struck with wonder. And they said, my dear king, everyone there has four arms, even the donkeys have four arms. And the king said, no way I'm going to stay on here any longer. He immediately gave up his kingdom, handed over the kingdom to others and went away to Jagannath Puri. He came to Puri, not as a king, but as a commoner. And all along, every day he was chanting the mantra that his guru had given him. He came to Jagannath Puri. He came to the temple. He had darshan of Lord Jagannath. And immediately, he said, this is the fulfillment of my life. This is what I have been waiting for all my life. This is the Lord of my dreams. And he ran forward to embrace the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. He wasn't aware of the pandas and the watchmen and the, you know, guards over there. And when the guards saw that here was someone who was rushing towards the deity like that, they immediately took up sticks and began to beat him. And so he was forced to withdraw. But then Gopakumar tells the Brahmana, then I considered this as a mercy of the Lord. And then I withdrew to a distance. And every day I would come and take darshan of Lord Jagannath. And I started getting so much happiness in seeing this form of the Lord. I even started neglecting the narration of the Puranas in which the pastimes of the Lord have been described. I only wanted to sit in front of Jagannath and see his beautiful form. At the same time, he was not able to forget Braja, Vrindavan. He was still remembering Govardhan. He was remembering his days as a cowherd boy. Something was not quite right, even though he was very happy. And one day, the king of Puri died. And his son, who was the heir apparent, was also a renunciate. He developed a sense of deep renunciation out of devotion to Jagannath. He said, I just want to be Jagannath's servant. I don't want the king. And the other sons of the king were just not qualified to be the king. So the ministers went to Jagannath and pleaded, please give us, show us a way out. And then Lord Jagannath indicated to Gopakumar. And then Gopakumar became the next king of Puri. So he expanded the worship and he continued on and on. He was also in great bliss. But now again, just like in the earlier time when he was a king, there was anxiety. So much of administration and so on. Even in the earlier kingdom that he ruled, even though he had delegated much of the responsibility to the relatives of the erstwhile king, there was still anxiety. The neighboring kings may attack. And the brahmanas in that kingdom was so meticulous about little procedures and rules and so on. So he was thinking there's too much anxiety. So when those devotees from Puri came, he just took that opportunity and left. So even though he was very happy having darshan of Lord Jagannath every day and serving him, still he didn't like the position of a king. No longer was that taste, that rasa there now. Because now that burden of that crown was there on his head. He just longed for the time when he could just love Jagannath and take his darshan as a commoner. So he approached the ministers and the other relatives of the ex-king, the deceased king, and said, you please take over, I can't do it anymore. And then somehow somebody else became king and he started living as a commoner in Jagannath Puri. But then he became even more famous. Because everybody said, look, he's such a great soul. He gave up the kingship of the kingdom and is living like a commoner simply out of love for Jagannath. And everybody started flocking to him. And he said, no way, I can't live like this. So then he came to Jagannath and said, Jagannath, I can't stay here any longer. Please forgive me. But when he saw Jagannath's beautiful face, he changed his mind. He stayed there for another 1 year. And time went by. And again one day, as his inspiration to think of Raja increased, he was still chanting his japa of that mantra that his guru had given him. And he got an indication there. He saw his guru in front of Jagannath one time. But it so happened, because he had not seen his guru since the first time that he got that mantra in Vrindavan. And now he saw the guru, but he was right in front of Jagannath. But he was so captivated by Jagannath's darshan that he couldn't take his eyes off Jagannath. And meanwhile, the guru disappeared again. And Gopakumar said, oh my God, what have I done now? So he was in misery. And then he went to the beach. And there he found his guru who was engaged in transcendental Nama Sankirtan. He was in ecstasy and the guru was very happy to see him. He gave him many nice instructions and said, look, I think you should just go back to Mathura. So he went back to Mathura. And then he was instructed like that. So he came to Mathura. But then again, from Mathura, where he lived, he came back. He was asked to go back to Puri because he was thinking, in Mathura, living here, even though there are other people who know me, and I've disguised myself, and they don't see me because I look like a foreigner, I'm missing Jagannath again. So on the way back, he came to the Ganga, and as he came there, he heard several brahmanas speaking about the glories of Swargaloka. Now, being an innocent cowherd boy from Govardhan, he had never heard of Swargaloka. What is that? What is heaven, hell? He didn't know all these things. So he said, maybe I should go and visit Swarga. So then he was chanting his mantra thinking, maybe I want to go to Swarga. And lo and behold, he was in Swarga. Because that mantra was so powerful. Whatever he desired, it fulfilled that desire. So in Swargaloka, he was welcomed. And he saw Lord Vishnu being worshipped by all the residents of Swarga. And Indra was every day worshipping him. And he was thinking, how fortunate is Indra? He's able to personally worship the Lord. And one day, Indra did something, committed a mistake, and he was cursed. And out of fear and shame, Indra hid himself somewhere. He disappeared. And then Lord Vishnu appointed Gopakumar as Indra. See, here was Gopakumar now becoming Indra. So once again, he expanded the worship of Lord Vishnu in the heavenly planets. And he didn't stop chanting his mantra. And he remained as simple. He was in the dress of a cowherd boy of Govardhan. He didn't change that. And of course, he continued, but the sense of dissatisfaction remained. There was something there. And even after he was Indra, one time he noticed some very exalted personalities had come down, and all the residents of Swarga were offering obeisances to them. He said, "Who are these people?" So everyone said, "Indra, offer obeisances." So he also offered, "Please tell me who they are." He said, "Oh, you don't know. These are great sages who have come from the higher planet of Maharloka." "Really? What's Maharloka?" "Oh, that's a higher planet than ours. And exalted personalities, they live over there and they absorb their consciousness in meditating on the Lord." So he was fascinated with Maharloka. And so he chanted his mantra to go to Maharloka. And lo and behold, he was in Maharloka. So he saw the sages there absorbed in complete bliss of samadhi, meditating on the Lord. They were experiencing a kind of bliss that we on earth cannot imagine. The bliss of meditating on the Lord in the heart. And then after some time, when he was observing this and relishing that happiness, some of the sages there came and said, "We're willing to give you the permanent residency and citizenship. So we're willing to appoint you as one of the sages of Maharloka to come." He said, "No, no, no. I'm thinking of Govardhan. I'm thinking of Raj. I'm looking at the Lord," because he was wandering all over Maharloka looking for the Lord of his life. And he was not finding him. So the sages sat him down and said, "Look, you're running here and there looking for the Lord. Look for the Lord within, like we are doing. Sit like us in meditation." And then he gave him a treatise on how that looking at the Lord within was superior to looking at the Lord outside. They said, "Look, it's only a devotee of the Lord who experiences transcendental happiness when he sees the Lord without. But demons, when they see the Lord physically, it creates negative emotions in them like fear and hatred and anger and so on. So sit, come, be one of us and meditate on the Lord within." And somehow he couldn't take up that invitation. He declined. And he said, "Let me just be like a cowherd boy here in Maharloka." And then one day in Maharloka, one very effulgent personality came there. And all the sages of Maharloka offered their obeisances. And following suit, so did Gopakumar. And then he asked him, "Who is this person?" "You don't know? You are Maharloka. You don't know of Sanat Kumar? He is one of the four brothers, the four sages of Tapaloka." Actually, before that incident happened, during the time of the universal devastation when the lower and middle planets are annihilated or submerged, the residents of Maharloka, they temporarily go to Janaloka, which is another higher planetary system. Just like when the house is flooded in Mayapur, you go to the first floor house, you know, because the ground floor is flooded. So they go to Janaloka, and then when everything's okay, the next day of Brahma starts, and they come back to Maharloka. So Gopakumar had experienced Janaloka also. So they came back to Maharloka, and here was Sanat Kumar, who came from an even higher planet called Tapoloka. And the sages started describing the glories of Tapoloka. And then Gopakumar said, let me see what it's like. So he chanted his mantra and he was in Tapaloka. And then the four Kumaras were there, and they were along with other sages who looked like them. They were absorbed in meditating on the Lord and glorifying him and so on. And the four Kumaras also began to explain to Gopa Kumar about the process of devotional service versus liberation and so on and so forth. The devotional scriptures also, the personified devotional scriptures, started speaking about the glories of a devotional service. And Gopa Kumar was relishing this philosophical discussion. But at the end of the day, he had still not found complete satisfaction. He had not found the Lord of his life, that perfection that he was looking for. There was still something there. He was keeping on chanting his mantra and feeling separation from Govardhan. And then one day the four-headed Brahma came by on a swan on the way to Pushkar to bless his worshippers. And then Gopa Kumar asked the four Kumaras and the others, who is this personality? He don't know Brahma. He is the creator of the universe. He is our father. And then, it's a long story, but you know what happens next. Gopa Kumar chants his mantra and he comes to Brahmaloka and he sees Mahapurusha, the form of the Lord on Brahmaloka. Brahma is worshipping him there. All the residents of Satyaloka or Brahmaloka are worshipping him. The Lord is happy. The devotees there are happy. Everything is blissful. But there's something missing for Gopa Kumar. Brahma also one day, somehow, there is a demon who comes along and Brahma goes into hiding. And then you know what happens next. And the Lord Mahapurusha appoints Gopa Kumar as Brahma. So Gopa Kumar as Brahma now wants to spread devotional service all over the universe. And the whole universe is filled with transcendental bliss because of the efforts of this Brahma. And then in Brahmaloka, time goes on. I'm doing a fast forward, right? Because you can't possibly complete the whole narration otherwise. He overhears some sages talking about somebody on earth having received moksha or liberation. So he's drawn into that conversation. What is this moksha, this liberation? And what happens? Where do they go? And then he's transported to the next level. He goes beyond the coverings of the universe. At every stage, he passes through certain stages. Sanatana Goswami describes all of these. He passes those coverings, comes to the place called Mahakalapur, where Lord Mahakal resides, who sometimes appears impersonal, sometimes appears in his personal form. He sees the dazzling impersonal Brahma Jyoti. And then he sees Lord Shiva, along with his associates. And he asks Nandishwar, who is this? You don't know Lord Shiva. And then he explains the glories of Lord Shiva. Of course, Lord Shiva then explains the glories of Braja and tells him to go back to Vrindavan. And he said, later then you will go, I beg your pardon, that happens before Mahakalapur, before he comes to Shivaloka. So when he comes to Shivaloka, he already has a transcendental body. This is the Shivaloka that exists beyond this universe. This Shivaloka is eternal and transcendental. And Sanatana Goswami explains that the Shiva who resides here is eternal and transcendental also. And then Shiva also glorifies Vaikuntha. So what is this Vaikuntha? Gopa Kumar asks. And Shiva describes the glories of the residents of Vaikuntha in their four-armed forms. And he said, you will one day be able to go to Vaikuntha, but first go back to Braj. He goes back to Braj and then he's transported to Vaikuntha. He's all the time chanting his mantra and that mantra is transporting him to all these different realms of existence. When he comes to Vaikuntha, he sees, because the residents of Vaikuntha have escorted him to the gates and they tell him, hold on for a while, just wait till we secure permission for your entry inside. So they go to do the needful. So there's a little bureaucracy there as well. Meanwhile, he's watching all these effulgent personalities coming in through the gates. Initially he thought, this is Narayan, this is Vishnu, this is Vishnu. And they all smile and say, no, no, we are servants of Vishnu. And he's watching, awestruck, these different effulgent personalities coming and going, and there's an atmosphere there that is just something that is, he could never have imagined. Ecstasy of Vaikuntha. And finally, the Lord comes. As the Lord comes, he's beside himself with bliss. And he says, Gopal, Krishna, and he rushes to embrace him. And the other residents of Vaikuntha say, shh, you can't do that, this is Vaikuntha. You know, he's from a distance, you have to offer respects to him. And so he understands the protocols, and then he settles himself in. But he's habituated to chanting the names of Krishna in abandon. And then some people of Vaikuntha, they say, no, no, you can't do this. You have to chant the standard prayers. You can't be so intimate and familiar with the Lord like this. So he's not able to settle in. Then Narad Muni comes in and tells him, actually, there's another place you should go to. You should go to Dwarka because Krishna is there. But on the way, there's Ayodhya. So go to Ayodhya. So chanting his mantra, he reaches Ayodhya. There's Hanuman, the monkeys. They're all chanting Ram's names. Then from there, he moves on to Dwarka. At Dwarka, he meets Krishna. He meets Uddhava. Narada explains about the glories of Goloka. And he explains how that Goloka descends into this material world as Gokula. He talks about many of the pastimes that happened there. He also describes how that Goloka and this Gokula are completely non-different. And then, after some time, having described how Vraja descends onto the earth and how the pastimes take place here, Gopa Kumar is himself transported to that Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna resides eternally as a transcendental cowherd boy. He enters into the fields, and there it is. Krishna with the cowherd boys is running here, and with his cowherd boys moving around, and then he sees Gopa Kumar, and he looks at him, and he calls out in great ecstasy, Sarup, because his name in Goloka is Sarup. Sarup, you have come, you have come. And then he embraces him in great joy and ecstasy. Krishna is beside himself with joy, so much so that the joy is uncontrollable, and he falls to the ground and loses his consciousness. So happy is he to see Gopa Kumar coming back, as because Sarup is his name there. And all the other residents of Goloka, they start admonishing, who is this person because of whom our Krishna has fallen unconscious? Is he a relative of Kamsa? Is he an agent of Kamsa? Who is he? And everybody then understands how dear this new devotee is. Can we bring that picture, please, from there? And this is a famous painting that shows this meeting of Krishna with Sarup or Gopa Kumar in the spiritual world. When Gopa Kumar reaches there, okay, yes, so you may unveil it now. Do it a little dramatically, okay? hold it up, like that. Can someone come and dramatically unveil it? And reveal to us the meeting of Gopa Kumar with Krishna, where Krishna welcomes him. Maybe you can keep it here. Yeah, just keep it here. And he says, Sarup, Sarup, you're back, you're back. Why have you tortured me like this? I've been waiting for so many years for you to come. Where have you been? Long time no see. And then he's back. And Of course, there's so much more to say, but time is limited, and I do want to leave a couple of minutes for some comments and questions. Yesterday, we didn't have any. And then he resides there. And the beauty of it is, then Gopakumar tells this Brahmana, to whom he has been speaking, then I found my ultimate destination. I found the Lord of my life, Krishna of Goloka Vrindavan. And my dear Brahmana, I now reside in both the Vrindavans. The Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world, sometimes I'm there, and sometimes I'm here in this Gokula Vrindavan. Actually, when he was in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan told him that I became your guru. I was Jayanta, who acted as your spiritual master, because I wanted to hasten your return, your coming to the spiritual world. And now Gopakumar has explained this most transcendental secret to the Brahmana, who also now becomes perfect. And after describing this, Maharaj Parikshit concludes. He concludes the discussion by giving some final instructions to his mother. And King Janamejaya has heard this, and he's not satisfied. He still wants more nectar. Please give me something more. He wants an appendix to the appendix. Please give me something final so that I can carry it in condensed form in my heart. And then Jaimini Rishi speaks a series of verses. I think it's 63 or 67 verses. I'm not sure exactly. From the first, some verses from the Brahma Samhita, and the remaining from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And these verses together are known amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as, anybody knows? These shlokas, these 60 odd shlokas, what are they called? Bhakti Rasayana. Rasayana means a tonic. They call the Bhakti Rasayana shlokas. And so devotees, the Gaudiya devotees, like to chant these verses one by one at different times. It nourishes their taste even of chanting. So the Brihad Bhagavatamrita concludes with the recitation of the Bhakti Rasayana. So for those of you who have access to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you can see these verses, print it out. I did that many years ago, and I used to gift it out to people, the Bhakti Rasayana. In those days, we didn't have these ready-made publishing, so we used to have to cyclostyle a Xerox and get it bound and distribute these little copies. So it's very, very nourishing. If you have the list of these shlokas, you can keep it with you. And every now and then, every day, maybe just look at some of these shlokas and experience great happiness. So this is how the Brihad Bhagavatamrita concludes. Srimad Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki jai, Gopakumar ki jai, Sri Sanatan Goswami ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm sorry I haven't been able to leave time for questions, but anyway, there's just 2 or 3 minutes. So if there's any comments or any questions, please feel free to ask. Yes. Say that again, this 10-syllable mantra? Yes. Does it give Krishna Prem? Yes. Yes. You have to read Brihad Bhagavatamrita for that. Yes, it's mentioned in the commentary, but in an indirect way. So these are not things that are obtainable like that. They are obtainable. We receive it at the time of the second initiation. We get our mantras. Sorry? This is not the 10-syllable mantra, yes. They are different Gayatri mantras that we receive. The Gaura Gayatri, the Gopala Gayatri, the Kama Gayatri. So those are also meant for attaining prema. You can do that. And fundamentally, of course, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Okay? Yes.
Came out beyond Bhagavatam.
The question is that it appears that Mother Uttara wanted him to summarize the Srimad Bhagavatam, but the story that came out was something different. Yes, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is not, as I was mentioning yesterday, a summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Sanatan Goswami does in the Vaishnava Toshani. But this is meant to be an elaboration, or it is meant to be, shall we say, a rasika devotee's tasteful elaboration on the Srimad Bhagavatam. To give the condensed points, the themes that have come up in the Srimad Bhagavatam will appear over here in this Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Okay, any other comments or questions? So please relish this picture. Remember the journey of Gopakumar. And remember that Krishna is also waiting for us. See how silently and patiently he's waiting, standing on the altar, just waiting, 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 waiting for us. And every time we come and say, like the story of Kailash, coming, just now coming, Krishna, just now coming. So now let's do some Harinam Sankirtan, which is the way to attain the lotus feet of the residents of Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.